everyone. Before we start, I wanted to let you know, if you would like to watch our whole service, head to our website. That's dc2.me. And from the media drop-down, click sermons. You can watch our whole service there. And now, here's this week's sermon.
Well, good morning and happy Easter to all of you. It is good to be together, particularly today, and it's great to be in the house. My name is Zach, and I'm one of the pastors here at Discovery, and I just wanted to share a welcome, particularly for those of you that are like, I'm new or I'm not here very often. Remind me again what this place is and what's going on here. We've got a team of folks over by our new coffee shop that's getting ready to open in just a few more weeks to the public. It'll be open on weekdays. Just has all the information of like, what do I do? What's going on here? How do I get connected? Can I get an email every now and again? Also things like, do we have like fun? Are there things that we do around here? We've got a bunch of guys going to play top golf in a couple weeks. We've got a women's event, escape rooms, Bible studies. If you're like, I'm looking for a mentor, like somebody to really like help, like walk alongside me. All of that information is out in the lobby and you can grab it on your way there. But it's Easter. And to get us into our teaching for today, let me read just a bit of what anchors us out of John chapter 2, verse 18. It says this, "The Jews then responded to him, 'What sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this?' And Jesus said, 'Destroy this temple, and I'll raise it again in 3 days.' They replied, 'It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days?' We'll get into that story a little bit more, but it's Easter. I have a weird job. I work on Easter Sundays. It's kind of funny that way. So we do Easter baskets in our house the night before. So last night, we're doing Easter baskets with our kids, which is weird, right? Like Easter is just kind of a strange holiday, like celebrate the birth of Jesus with chocolate and rabbits. It's just odd. And so we did that last night, chocolate and rabbits. Everyone was lovely. My kids had a great time. My youngest, Oaks, who is 6, it's just so much fun. Chris, like this season of life as a parent, he's our last one. And like every year that he gets older, I'm like, oh, it's slipping. Like there goes early childhood, like the magic. Ah! And so as we're wrapping up last night, he's got a new t-shirt, Yoshi from the Mario Brothers on his t-shirt, just freaking out. He's got this little gun that shoots these foam airplanes. Amazing. And then I want you to imagine this. In his best Danny DeVito nerd New Jersey accent, he looks me right in the eyes and says, "So how much? How much do I owe you for all this?" Now, to be clear, this didn't happen. But if we're going to get into this teaching today, this idea matters. And now that you know that, I want you to picture he's got a cigarette in his mouth, and now he's like, how much do I owe you for what's going on here? And it's like, no, it's a gift. But I want you to imagine a child, a son or a daughter, who everything they do with their parent is a transaction. Like, hey, thanks for this, but like, I don't know. Like, I might leave the basket. We've opened everything. I know what it is. Like, I've tabulated the cost in my head. I might just leave it there because I don't know if I, like, want it all. Can I have parts? Can I just get the Yoshi t-shirt and what's going on there? How much? How much for this stuff? And so often, I think that can be some of the dynamic that begins to play in with my journey with God. And I don't know what brings you here today, but so often I find places in my own heart where I feel like, how much? How much is it? What do I got to do? Who do I got to be? What needs to change? What's the cost? And I love this church because in this room we've got folks who are like, this is my one time a year that I come. I don't follow Jesus. This is like a thing I do for my family. You're welcome here. And I hope that as we go through this teaching today, it's not something you're like, that's like, that doesn't relate. I hope that this matters. And I also think that this kind of thinking, I mean, if you're like a holy roller who's been following Jesus for decades, that this is still one of those teachings that's like, man, this story is so good. Like, I love hearing the story over and over and over. We've just come to call it the gospel, which is a super Christianese word for like, this is just good news. You want to hear a good story? We're going to get into a good story today. Now, the nature of today is this. No matter where we're coming in, I would venture a guess that we're all wanting to receive something. Because I think we all have needs, and I think we all have desires. And I think, too, if we push even further into it all, we all have longings. Things that we just like, we feel in our guts and in our stories. Like, man, is there more to life? Here's some of mine. I want to be provided for. But it's not just enough to know that I have all that I need. That's part of it. But I also want to be provided in a way that I can be a part of getting to provide for the needs of others. That's like a desire and a longing and a need. I want to be taken on an adventure. I want to feel alive in my guts, to feel passion and see beauty and just feel the creativity and joy that comes with a fully lived life. Do you carry that longing in you? I do. I want to feel meaning and purpose, not to only know that I matter, but to know that the things that I do matter, that they work on a similar wavelength to what's true and good and beautiful in the world. I long for that. I want to know love. Not just the sweet feeling of loving someone else, although that I want that. But if I'm honest, I want to know the deep feeling of knowing that no matter what I do, that someone, somewhere, calls me good and worthy and wanted. What do you long for? What do you desire? And my lived experience in this world often leads to a resentment of how often I don't feel this way. I hate how much I worry about money, whether that worry is that I don't have enough or that I'm hoarding too much. I hate how isolating loneliness feels and the agony of feeling like I'm misunderstood and you don't really understand me. I resent the anesthesia of entertainment and scrolling and consumerism and suffering in the world. It just feels so alienating, whether it's reading news about a starving child in a war-torn country or hearing again about the suicide of a friend's child here in town. We're all looking for something, and the gap we feel in this desire, the world in which we live, it's big. What is it for you? What do you long for? What do you find the lived reality saying? Places where you unconsciously find yourself muttering prayers in the quiet of the night. Prayers like, what am I supposed to do? Who am I supposed to be? Why am I doing this again? God, where are you? Help. I need you. If you've ever had times where you just feel this kind of humanness, this smallness, this human-sizedness, in need of something more, in need of hope, you're in the right place, because the people in this story, they're those kind of people. They're also looking for something just like that. And as we lean into our story today, this idea is squarely in the spotlight. And I hope as we read that we are reminded of one of the most simple and yet mind-blowingly profound truths of God. That this God has never been about transaction. He has always been about inviting us, all of us, into relationship with him. And that if there are places in our stories, in our life, where we find ourselves going, I have these longings, how much will it cost me to lean in? How much does it cost for me to be in on what you're up to? Let's jump further into this story. John chapter 2, we're going to start in verse 13 and go through 23. This is right at the beginning of John's story that he's writing about his friend and teacher, Jesus. There's not much that's happened so far. This is at the very front end of Jesus' whole adult ministry, and it goes like this. When it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle and sheep and doves and others sitting at tables exchanging money. And so he made a whip out of cords. And he drove all from the temple courts, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of the money changers. He overturned their temples. To those who sold doves, he said, get out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a market. His disciples remembered that it is written, zeal for your house will consume me. Then the Jews responded to him, what sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this? Jesus answered, destroy this temple, and I'll raise it again in 3 days. They replied, it's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days? But the temple he had spoken of was his body. And after he was raised from the dead, his disciples recalled what he had said. And then they believed the scripture and the words that Jesus had spoken. Now, while he was in Jerusalem at the Passover festival, many people saw the signs he was performing, and they believed in his name. Happy Easter. When we dig into this story, hiding just a scratch into the surface is Passover, another holiday, another festival. And it matters to John, the writer of this story, that we know that. He bookends the story by saying, it's Passover, and just a reminder, it's Passover. Why does that matter? Passover, this era, and it's still this way today, pilgrims from all over the world, Jewish people who are in the diaspora, will come back to Jerusalem to truly, if you're like truly Jewish, you do Passover in the city of Jerusalem. So Jesus, being Jewish, with all of his Jewish students, his disciples, they go up into the city of Jerusalem. They're going to do Passover right. But just like everybody else that's coming into town, when you get into Jerusalem, there's sacrifices that you need to offer at the temple. There's different foods, animals that you need for the meal that you're going to prepare for Passover, and they need to be kosher. Like, there's specific things that you need there. But you wouldn't travel if you were coming super far with, like, you know, a dove shoved in your backpack. I don't know if you've ever sat next to that person on the plane. They still exist today. Most people, though, not most people. You'd wait until you get into Jerusalem. And this was not lost on some of the folks who were there. Not only did you need animals, but you would also need currency. If you were in particularly the temple, you'd need a particular kind of currency just for the temple. But if you were coming from far out of town, you might need some other forms of changing money. So as Jesus and his friends come into the city, the first place they go is like, we got to start at the temple. And as they walk in, they see people that are selling animals to all these travelers that have just come to worship God. Like, they've just come to celebrate. And it's so important, the detail that John throws in of, like, Jesus looks at the people that are selling doves. To those who sold doves, he said, get out of here. Why do you just hone in on the dove people? It's because doves were, like, if you had nothing, like, if we're impoverished, that's, like, the cheapest thing that we can do. And we've got these folks who have realized, oh man, this time of year, supply and demand, it gets awesome for those of us that live in town and have animals nearby. We can like jack the price way up. And for those of us that know how to exchange currency, we can jack the price way up. And as the poorest of the poor are walking through the doors of the temple to just like pay what little they have for a dove, the price is jacked way up. Jesus comes in, he's like, absolutely not. This temple is messed up, man. This temple is made by human hands. It's attended by human priests. There's corruption there. And as Jesus walks in, the exploitation and the opportunity fill your nostrils like the stench of all of these animals, surely, metaphorically, are doing. For Jesus, this is a place that was meant for relationship. And it's been degraded into a sense of transaction. How much? It's not what this was supposed to be about. The people of this time, everybody who's coming into Jerusalem for this Passover, they're longing for the same things that you and I are longing for. I just want a good temple. I just want a place to like actually encounter the God of the universe, the one who made me and knows me. And even if I'm not in on that, like to have a conversation with somebody who can maybe tell me what the heck is true. I'm looking for a temple that's the way it's supposed to be. For those of us, we had a huge Passover dinner actually here on Friday night. It was such a blast. Every time we do this, it just blows my mind with how much is hidden in that story. And one thing this year that just like, it just got me, like in the chest, was you get to the end of this big meal, and it's very formal, all these very particular prayers. You pray it this way, because that's how we've been praying it for like 4,000 years. It's incredible. And the last prayer, the way that you finish this meal, is this with this prayer called the Adir Hu. And the Adir Hu really is this prayer that just says, next year in Jerusalem, God, rebuild your temple. Rebuild this city. And it's such a profound way to end this meal because it's not this longing of like, hey, let's rebuild it together. For thousands of years, the Jewish people will end one of the most important festivals of their year by saying, will you come down and build this temple again? Because it's messed up. And we all know it. Like, it was a good attempt, but it's kind of become this like place that I don't want to be. What is this temple? Oh, you guys, this temple. It's this idea that God's not far away. God in this story, like the whole thing, like you can start like in the very first chapter, Genesis 1, it's what this story is all about. God's not far away. In this story, we see over and over and over again, God is designing places so that he can be with his people. This first story starts in a place called the Garden of Eden. In Genesis, when God creates the world, day one, day two, day six, he's just making these incredible things. And on day seven, he rests. It's this idea that like his whole presence, he just kind of moves into the place. Like we've been renovating this house, we built from the ground up on this thing, and now it's move-in day. I'm here now. On day six is when he created these couple folks, Adam and Eve. And so the fact that as God's creating the world, that he decides to move in, he's like a roommate here. I mean, the story goes on in chapters 2 and 3. We have these images of God just walking around, like having conversations with them. It's profound to me that on the very first day, God creates Adam and Eve on day six. So like their first day in the world, like as people, is day seven. And they wake up and they're like, all right, what do we do today? And God's like, you know what we do today? It's day seven. It's a Sabbath. We're going to just chill. It's vacation. You know what we're going to do today? We're going to hang out. And we're just going to look at all this cool stuff. And we're going to enjoy it. We're going to enjoy it together. I want to just be with you and delight in all of the good that I've put into this place. That's the agenda for the whole day. As soon as you're hungry, we've got food. Any question you have, any need that you have, any desire that you have, let's go. What a great way to like wake up in the world. Day one, vacation, sweet. I like this God is like really interesting to me. Imagine this. Unlike so many creation stories, these people, they don't become the servants or the slaves. They become partners. The dynamic, really, that he begins to set up is this idea of, like, they're like children. He's like a dad, like a good dad. And this Adam and Eve and humanity, they're these creatures, these people in which to be delighted in and with whom to share life with. It's beautiful. This photo was unfortunately snapped right before the aliens abducted Adam and Eve. Just kidding, we're not that kind of church. Part of why we have this picture is it's hard to find a family-appropriate picture of Eden. For real. And like, let that teach you a little bit. There's some risque intimacy that happens. Scrolling for a good picture, this is like the most appropriate I could find. Risque intimacy. Just walk around, nothing on, enjoying everything that's been made, talking with the one who made it and knows all the juicy details of why something's awesome, delighting. Worry doesn't exist here. Work is meaningful. Life is in proper harmony. It's purely good. And also, the dynamic that's here, the task given to Adam and Eve is work and keep this garden. Work and keep this world. And unfortunately, that dynamic that made it possible for them to have this relationship with God, Adam and Eve corrupt. And they can't hold their end of the deal. And despite what maybe some really bad theology would teach us, God doesn't like leave in this moment. Like the very next chapter, he's like talking with Adam and Eve's kids, which would lead us to believe like he's still just hanging out talking with people. And we go from Abel to a guy named Noah to a guy named Abraham to a guy named Moses, and God is just chatty. Like he's involved with everybody that's around. And things really ramp up in this story when God chooses to not just generally be in his creation, although he remains there, but he chooses specifically to be in his creation with a specific group of people. And we're going to get a new place where God's going to live. And it's called the tabernacle. In the story of Exodus, as the Israelites are leaving Egypt and they're headed to the promised land, to this country of Israel, God has them build this like tent, this nomadic tent that he's just going to travel with them. Let that teach, man. He's just going to travel with them. And the way that he tells them to design and like decorate this thing, it's unmissable. That he's saying, I want you to design a Garden of Eden. It's going to be mobile. It's going to travel with you everywhere you go. That's where I live. I live there. Inside the menorah that we celebrate on Hanukkah is this image of the tree of life. On the sides, on the walls, there's pomegranates and flowers. There's angels that decorate the inside of this thing. All of it is a callback to Eden. Remember that relationship that we were supposed to have? I'm going to travel with you. And don't forget, that's where I live. I live in that kind of a place. God's presence fills this tabernacle. And as they're wandering in the desert, God is literally with them. And then they arrive one day in this promised land, in this nation of Israel, and this tabernacle becomes a permanent fixture, and it's called the temple, which now our antenna should start perking up of like, what's this got to do with our story of Jesus in the Passover today? As they move into this nation, it's been 1,000 years now, as we get into the story of Jesus, that this temple, this literal building, has been built in Jerusalem. And it's the same decor as the tabernacle. Flowers and angels, pomegranates, trees. All is a reminder of this situation in Eden. This invitation, this desire, the rest, the vacation, the delight, the conversation. And the job description that's given to those working here in the temple is the same job description that was given to those working in the tabernacle, is the exact same words that were given to Adam and Eve. You work it and you keep it. That's your job. And the problem is that just like their great-great-great-great-great-grandparents, the human priests, the people of this tabernacle and this temple, they just couldn't hold up their end of the deal. So as we play back the tape on this whole story of like, what's this temple? Why is Jesus making such a big deal of this temple? It's so important to know these images of buildings and of this garden all have been communicating one thing the entire time. They all have the same purpose. Here's a painting done by an Israeli artist who just does some incredible stuff. What's the story of Scripture? It's a story of a God who's simply creating spaces for us to be with him and to experience him as a dad and to know our value as a child and to rest and delight. This is a beautiful painting. In the time of Jesus, you can leave that up for a little while. Yeah, I wish I was looking the direction you were looking. That's way better to look at than I am for sure. Yeah, look at that. In the time of Jesus, no matter what direction you were traveling on your way in for Passover to Jerusalem, you would see this temple. Jerusalem's built on this hill at the very top of the hill, the pinnacle. That's where the temple is. No matter what direction you're coming in from, that's what you see. That's what you're reminded of. Most of all, this reminder that God longs to be with his people and the invitation is open to be with him. This is where Jesus comes on scene. He walks into town, he goes straight up to the temple, and he looks around, and he sees transaction everywhere that he looks. And it's like a dad's response to a kid when they want to settle an account. Happy Easter. We got you chocolate and bunnies. How much? Do I have to take all of it? This is a transaction. And Jesus just, like, he doesn't snap. Like, that's not the idea that's going on here. Zeal for his house consumes him. Jesus knows that picture in the center, that's what this is supposed to be. You're robbing the poor people here. And he just starts flipping over a table. He drives everything out, cleanses this place, restores it back to what it was supposed to be. As if he's saying, if you want to find me, if you want to talk with me, if you want to experience peace and joy in the presence and provision of God, man, this can't be here anymore. And these folks, I think this is where it starts to get pretty fun for us. These folks were already tearing down the temple. They were tearing it down because they were making the basis of their relationship with God a transaction kind of a relationship. This house is about knowing and loving and being with a person. It's about a relationship and a father. This matters to Jesus. Zeal. Oh, what happens here matters. It cannot be based on the basis of trade. And then John, the author, jumps in, and we get some like really juicy commentary going on here, because John says, we're not just talking about the building. Like, I know, like, the setting is really awesome. Like, it looks like this crazy huge castle that we're like, this is the temple. John goes, just so it's clear, reader, we're actually not talking about the brick and mortar that's going on here. In verse 21, but the temple he had spoken of was his body. What? This is where we need to keep in mind, what's the point of the temple again? Oh yeah, this is the place where heaven and earth connect. This is the place where the relationship happens. This is a place where a father and a child, like, that's the dynamic. And Jesus is taking that whole dynamic and he's locating it not in a tabernacle tent, not in a garden, not in a structure. So if you really want to know where this relationship begins, where it happens, what's the setting? It's right here. I am the two-way bridge between humanity and deity. I am God's location. And I'll hold up both ends of the deal. Here's something new. From here on out, I'll make sure nothing is hinging on the work of people to work and keep this temple. I'll do it. You just come and enjoy. What are you looking for? Peace or provision? Adventure? Meaning, the knowledge of knowing you're loved without condition, are you looking for hope that somewhere, someday, things can just be put right and good again? God is giving that to all of us, extravagantly and lavishly through his temple, which is Jesus Christ. We all live with some sense of this old temple. We all live with this transactional kind of relationship with God that Jesus is actively trying to replace. If you ever find yourself, like I do, wondering, like, are you absent because I haven't done enough? Is it hard to connect with you because, like, I've messed up some things? Like, if I can just get my poop in a group a little bit better on Monday, maybe things will be better here. What do I owe you? What do I have to do? Who do I have to become? Transaction temples are what kills Jesus in our lives. When we barter, when we make it about being a good person, when we try to prove that we're worthy of love, when we think that in order for him to do something for us, we have to do something for him, it's all the stench of transaction in a place where relationship should be. Relationship temples. That's what allows us to be fully alive in this Jesus. I'm a son. Some of us are daughters. We receive because you're loved. I'm invited to life with God because that's what he's always wanted to give me. I'm simply responding. Relationship allows us to walk in a confidence that we're forgiven, that the core of our identity is not all the messed up stuff that we've done or the stuff that's been done to us. The core of our identity is that we're family, that there's a belonging here, and that, man, that is good news. You don't have to earn any of this. It's not about what you do. It's about showing up for the relationship and enjoying it and responding in it. Happy Easter. Whatever the prayers you pray, the longings or the desires you have, or the needs that you carry, this is what he's done. And this is what we celebrate today. John gives this juicy little detail. The Jews responded to him saying, "Prove it. What gives you the authority? What gives you the right to drive people out of this transaction temple?" And Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and I'll build it back in 3 days." And the disciples later went, 3 days, Easter, the temple was built again today. There's access to God today, and it does not hinge on my ability to work or keep it. It's just an open door. This is what God wants still. Access to God, to speak of Him, to worship Him, to receive from Him, to be with Him. The bridge of the relationship cultivated in Eden, it's been built again. And today we celebrate that it's a whole new system. It's perfect because He's done all the work, all the building. He's already paid for it. It's the freedom. And the invitation and the good news is just stop approaching Him with the transaction of it all. And I've been following Jesus for a little while. This is not something you're like, okay, done. Welcome to the rest of your spiritual journey. It is hard to remove this temple of transaction from the way that we live. And today is just one more invitation to go, don't forget the story. Don't forget how it works. You can set those transactions down. They aren't needed, and they'll actually only ever do you harm. I'm going to invite the band out. We're going to spend some time just responding to this story. But whatever it is that we may find ourselves looking for today, if it's healing and the wholeness and the longings you carry, it's available. In this new temple, in this relationship from Eden, it's offered. Today, if you're hearing this and you want to respond to it, whether it's the first time for you or whether you're wanting to renew a commitment that you've made in the past and you've just kind of forgotten about it, you've let slip, I'd simply invite you, talk to Him about it. Like, you have direct access. And absolutely, if you're like, man, I don't know what to say, I don't know what to do. Like, you can, I'll be up in front after the service. I would love to, like, pray with you and guide you in that prayer. But ultimately, this is about you and Him. It's delightful. This picture is a picture of you. So if you'd like some help, you can come grab me, a whole bunch of our staff. There just will be folks around. Grab any of us. We'd love to pray with you. But for my part for this morning and for our part together, let's pray. Jesus, I love that these aren't just disconnected random events that have been collected in a dusty old book. But I love that it's this consistently improving invitation that we now get to respond to in a way of like, I just show up for this. My relationship with God, my need to understand things, to work and keep this temple, I'm off the hook. Thanks for the opportunity as human beings to wake up. And in our spiritual lives, that day one is always a day of vacation and delight with you. Because you care about the relationship. Like, that's it. And thanks that in all the ways where we as human beings can practice religion and practice spirituality, thanks for this picture of a dad and a daughter. This intimacy that can at times border on the risque. Thank you for this day to remind us that in your death and in your resurrection, a whole new dynamic was born, and we can now just simply delight in a good story. We ask all this in your name. Amen.